Good afternoon and welcome to Frankly Speaking About Cancer with the Cancer Support Community. Your host is Kim Tibaldo, President and CEO of the Cancer Support Community. This hour is designed to inspire, inform, and to help you live better with cancer. Now, here's your host, Kim Tibaldo.
Welcome to Frankly Speaking About Cancer, an internet radio show that focuses on informing and inspiring people to live well with cancer. I'm your host, Kim Tibaldo, CEO of the Cancer Support Community. The Wellness Community and Gilda's Club have united to become the Cancer Support Community, one of the largest providers of cancer support in the United States and around the world. Our services are offered at more than 170 locations worldwide and online at www.cancersupportcommunity.org. Well, there's no doubt that being diagnosed with cancer is life-changing. People often talk about their lives in terms of before and after cancer. And as hard as it is to receive this devastating diagnosis, it's often even harder to have to share it with loved ones, especially when those loved ones are children. Many families struggle with what to tell children and instinctively try to protect them from the uncertainty, the fear, the feelings of powerlessness that often come with a cancer diagnosis. But the reality is that children, even very young children, can feel the impact of an illness on a family. Today, we're joined by two amazing women, author, cancer survivor, and mother, Donya Youssef, and Carissa Hodgson, program manager at Gilda's Club in Madison, Wisconsin. Well, every family is different and has its own needs, but Donya and Carissa are going to share with us their insights and experiences about breaking the news of a cancer diagnosis to children, talking to them about the impact on their lives, and helping them to cope through all of the changes they are living through so that you can find solutions that best serve you and your family. We're going to meet Donya first and will later be joined by Carissa. Let me tell you about Donya. She is a wife, a mother, an entrepreneur, a writer, and a cancer survivor. She is the award-winning author of The Monster in Mummy, Demonstify Cancer for Children, and a columnist for Sovereign Global Magazine. She is the director of Tiny Angels Models and Tiny Angel Adults Limited, both modeling and acting agencies, and recently launched Tiny Angels Press Limited. Donya currently resides in the UK, but spent her childhood in the Middle East, where she was homeschooled by her British mother, who was a primary school teacher, and her Egyptian father, who was a consultant anesthetist for the British Army. That's an anesthesiologist for those of us here in the States. After her diagnosis and treatment, Donya decided to lead her life with renewed purpose and inspire other parents to overcome traumatic news and empower them. She is now an advocate for cancer survivors and is raising awareness that behind every cancer diagnosis is a real person with dreams and aspirations. Welcome to the show, Donya.
Hi, thank you. Thank you very much for having me on your show.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure. Donya, before we get started and jump in to the topic at hand, tell us how you're doing.
Yeah, I'm really good, actually. Really, really good. Actually, I've been in the hospital today for more checkups and stuff. So yeah. It's been a busy day, but I'm good. I'm feeling good these days.
Fantastic. Good to hear. So speaking of busy, you are a busy lady, a wife, mother of two girls, a businesswoman. Can you tell us a bit about what was going on in your life when you started to feel unwell?
Right. I was breastfeeding my youngest, actually, and I was quite tired, but I obviously put it down to running the agency, which obviously is very, very busy, and not getting much sleep with my youngest. So I started losing weight, but then I was trying to lose weight anyway. So it was all, a bit of a coincidence, I guess. And I'm just getting more and more tired. And when my youngest started sleeping slightly better through the night, I became even more tired. Mm. And then I just thought, have I got like postnatal depression or something? Because I was feeling quite low and I couldn't understand why I was doing exercise. I wasn't drinking. I don't smoke. I was, leading quite a healthy lifestyle. Mm. So it just didn't make sense. So I went to the doctors and I said, look, guys, I'm feeling tired. Something just doesn't seem right. They did tests and all the tests were fine. So then I was like, okay, I'll just get over it. You know, it must be just me just going through it, through, you know, various motions, whatever. So I went out. I remember I hadn't been out for ages. It was my birthday. And I thought, I'm going to go and treat myself and go out with some friends and have a drink for the first time in a while.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I let my hair down, had a great night, had a, you know, obviously had a few drinks, but I was very violently sick. Mm. And I wasn't sure if that was, again, because I hadn't drunk in ages.
Yeah, yeah.
Or what it was relating to. But I woke up in the morning with a huge lump under my armpit. And I thought, had I fallen over or something?
Oh, my gosh.
But it wasn't. It was a big lymph node. Because I called up my father, who's obviously a doctor. Mm. And he said, have you checked your breasts? And I said, well, no. I just literally abruptly stopped breastfeeding the child because she wouldn't get off the breast. And it just felt like hardness. There was no lumps. But he said, just please, please go to GP. I want you to get checked out. So I said, okay, fine, I'll go. So I did go, and that's, they picked up straight away. They said, look, we can feel some hard lumps in there. So they referred me straight away. And obviously it was picked up immediately on the mammogram, and then the biopsies confirmed. So yeah, they diagnosed me with breast cancer, which had spread to the lymph node. So I had to start the chemotherapy straight away.
And what age were you, Dunya, when this happened?
I was
what year?
39. Mm-hmm. So they would say that the tumors took three, that they're estimating about 3 years to grow. One was 7 centimeters, one was 5 centimeters, and one was 3 centimeters. So it took a while, which obviously I had no recollection. I couldn't feel anything as such. So it was actually quite scary to know that all of this was going on, and I was oblivious to it, I guess.
And is the guideline in the UK for mammography same as US, 40? You start at 40, so you wouldn't have even had a screening mammogram yet?
Yeah, that's right. No, I didn't have any mammograms. And I, to be fair, I wasn't even checking because I wasn't really aware. So I just, yeah, I just didn't think about it. I thought, well, breastfeeding, you know, you're fine when you breastfeed because it kind of protects you. Yeah. But that wasn't the case. So it, you know, it scared me because I never even imagined it would be breast cancer, not at 39 when I had two little ones.
Of course.
You know, the youngest, she wasn't even two. My eldest, she wasn't, I mean, she just turned 5, but, you know, they were both young. And, yeah, it was just really shocking and really frightening. Sure. to understand that was what I was being diagnosed with.
Of course. So tell us a little bit, Dunya, about the sort of the diagnosis, the prognosis, the treatment plan. Just quickly kind of walk us through what they were recommending at that point, because I really want to get into the discussion about the girls, you know.
Yeah, 6 months chemotherapy. They wanted to do a lumpectomy, but then halfway through my chemo, they confirmed I had the BRCA2 gene. Mm-hmm. So then they said I was high risk of ovarian cancer. So they changed the chemotherapy to accommodate, you know, if obviously for the ovarian cancer as well. Then they removed the ovaries and the fallopian tubes. Then they did a double mastectomy instead of a lumpectomy. So they did, it's called a Dieppe flap. So it's a 10-hour operation. And they removed my stomach fat and implanted it, so I had natural implants. Mm-hmm. So I mean, it's pretty amazing what they can do now. So I had that. I had the therapies. I had Herceptin therapies. I had various drug bone strengthening drugs. That I'm on a trial at the moment. So I mean, yeah, it was quite intense. I mean, you know, my brain's. They call the chemo brain, so it's right. Sometimes you forget and your brain freezes and you forget certain things, but you know, it was so intense. I mean, so the point is I ended up getting sepsis because I had to have chemo every week in the end. Mm. And I got blood clots, and you know, I was always in and out of A&E, and it wasn't nice at all. And you know, obviously with the young kids, I just you know, some days I was just living from hour to hour because as soon as I hit a temperature, you know, I'd have to call the ambulance or get to A&E within the hour to get the IV antibiotics in me. Mm. And that happened every week. I was constantly in and out to the point they had to get the drips to come, the nurses to come to my house in the end, because I was picking up everything. I literally couldn't leave my house in the end. So yeah, it was pretty intense. But I got through it. A year exactly to the date, I got the all clear, which was amazing news. And they obviously removed my lymph nodes. So I had an operation to remove all of them because there was still, unfortunately, cancer in the lymph nodes after all the chemotherapy. Mm. So, obviously with any cancer patient, you know, you've always got the fear of it coming back. And
sure.
They're going to do another biopsy on another, you know, investigate another area.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It never really goes away, but you just learn to cope better with it, shall we say.
Yeah. So Dunya, let's thank you for that background and for sharing that. Let's pivot to the girls. You said your daughters were 5 and 2 at the time. So just take a minute to tell us, to what extent did they know something was wrong? When and how did you decide to tell them what was going on? Like, walk us through that period.
Yeah. When I first found out, I was just crying constantly, but I couldn't tell them. They obviously knew I was upset, so they were getting panicked. They started playing up with me really badly, you being really naughty. And it was their way of crying, you know, they want their mummy. You know, they didn't know. I kept going to the hospital. They didn't know what was going on.
Yeah.
And I was just didn't want to hurt them, or I just didn't know what to do. And then, you know, after a while, I thought, I've got to be honest with these kids. You know, they need to know rather than me trying to hide something when they know something's up. The little one was if I'd come back from the hospital, she would get me really angry and push me into my office and make me stay in there. Mm. And it was like her way of saying, don't go. Yeah, it was really weird because I just couldn't know. I didn't even know where she'd got this from. And I was questioning her nursery. I go, why is she pushing me in the room? She's never been pushed in a room. I don't understand. And then my eldest was wetting the bed, and she'd never wet her bed in her life. Like, she was really good, potty trained easily. And she was crying at school. And it was just all getting too much. Everything was out of control. You know, I just didn't know what to do. And then one day I thought, right, I'm going to take control now of things that maybe I can have a bit of control over. So it started with my hair, because my hair all started falling out. And it was just, it was horrible. I put my hands through my head and clumps of it. I was like a molting cat. And then I thought, kids, I want to, you know, let's do something fun with mummy. Let's cut mummy's hair. And then I said to the mummy's got to have some strong medicine and it's probably going to fall out. They kept asking questions and I just still didn't know what to say. So I researched and I bought a book online. It was called Mummy's Lump. It was recommended by one of the charities.
Mm-hmm,
and I sat down one day and I thought, I've got to be brave. I've got to tell them. And it was like admitting, it was a really hard way. It was like I was accepting cancer by telling my kids and I didn't want to accept it.
Mm-hmm.
So when I sat the children down either side of me, I mean, my little heart, I was fighting the tears back because I was like, I just was so terrified of seeing them hurt. And I was more angry at the cancer because it was like, how can you do this to my babies? They don't deserve this.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it was mental torture, if you ask me. It was horrendous. Mm-hmm. So I sat them down and you know what? They accepted it so well. So they were like, oh, is that what you've got, mummy? I said, yes, mummy's got a lump and it needs, they're going to take it away and they're going to give me this strong medicine to make it better. And weirdly, after all this anxiety and worry and stress, It was like the plug had been pulled and they were fine. And they just accepted it. And then from day dot, because the way I kind of express myself is to write, and I wanted to get it out. So I wrote daily a diary, and I didn't even think about writing a book, but I just wrote it as just personal, you know, as an outlet, shall we say.
Yes.
And afterwards, yeah, it came to the point that I just thought halfway through treatment, I wanted to write a book, put it in a book. And I knew my kids were happy when they saw this. And I saw all these other mothers suffering on all these groups, unable to communicate the diagnosis to their children. So I thought, well, I've done something which I felt really worked for me by just reading this book, but I felt I could bring a little bit more to the platform and to help my kids further. So I got an amazing illustrator on board, and I got them to draw my children. So they were involved. I wanted them to be part of this journey because they were part of it with me. And we were all on it together, and we'd all get through it together. So that's what I did. And they were so excited, you know, the journey, looking at their little pictures of themselves. And it was just really lovely to see them happy and excited. And it just made me really happy. And I was just buzzing. So then I turned from this horrible negative, I'm going to die, you know, I'm preparing for my death, and, you know, trying to source, you know, partners for my husband so he could look after the children. I mean, it just went crazy. But it turned into a positive then. And then I got on a different mindset. And then it was so rewarding when I published the book, and I was helping others as well. And you know, so from helping myself and my children, I then managed, when I got the all clear, to publish the book as a thank you. And I wanted to help everyone else as well. So
that's fantastic. Where
the Monster and Mummy was born from.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, sorry.
Yeah. Just a wonderful, wonderful story. And I think that on the show, on Frankly Speaking About Cancer, we love to hear these stories about folks who really took their own cancer experience and turned it into something that would really help others through your own experience. This is Frankly Speaking About Cancer. We're going to take a quick break, Donya, and we've got a lot more to cover in our next in our next segment. But we're talking to Donya Youssef. She's a writer. She's a cancer survivor, and has written an award-winning book called The Monster and Mummy: Demonstify Cancer for Children. We've got a lot more to discuss with the book. This is Frankly Speaking About Cancer. Our episode today is brought to you in part by Bristol-Myers Squibb, Insight, Celgene, Lilly Oncology, and Merck. We've got to take a quick break. We've got a lot more to discuss with Donya Youssef, so don't go away. This is Frankly Speaking About Cancer. I'm Kim Thibodeau. We'll be right back.
Cancer. It's a lonely word. Terms I don't understand. Choices I never thought I'd have to make. But there is hope and help.
Support from cancer survivors.
Links to research and clinical trials.
Help with finances and access to care.
All behind you at Breakaway from Cancer, created by Amgen to empower cancer patients.
The cancer support community is proud to be a partner of Breakaway from Cancer.
At Lilly Oncology, we know people living with metastatic breast cancer, or MBC, deserve more. There has been progress made over the last few years in bringing forward new treatment options, but there is still more to be done. Lilly Oncology is focused on raising more awareness through education, more research, and more dedicated solutions to help empower people living with this disease, because together, we can do more for MBC. This content is selected by the cancer support community and is funded in part by Eli Lilly and Company.
People living with breast cancer often find it difficult to ask for help, and many of the people in their lives want to help but don't know how. During National Breast Cancer Awareness Month, Cancer Support Community is proud to support Meal Train, sponsored by Magnolia, which utilizes MealTrain.com, a free shared online calendar to streamline the process of giving and receiving meals for families coping with breast cancer. Help us reach our goal of 1,000 new breast cancer-specific meal trains this October. To learn more, visit mealtrain.com/MMT and enter the code MAGNOLIAB, or visit us at cancersupportcommunity.org. Cancer Support Community is proud to be a partner of Magnolia Meals at Home, a new pilot program that aims to help patients by providing nourishing meals to households affected by breast cancer so loved ones can spend more quality time together. This program is currently available in and around two pilot cities, Andover, Massachusetts, and Woodcliffe Lake, New Jersey. Participants will receive one delivery of meals every month for up to 6 months when enrolled in the program. Each delivery includes up to 7 meals designed to help meet the nutritional needs of people living with breast cancer and 10 meals for family members. This novel program is brought to you by the AZI Women's Oncology Program, Magnolia. Cancer Care, the Cancer Support Community, and Meals on Wheels Association of America. To find out if you or loved ones are eligible, visit online at www.magnoliameals.com or call 617-733-5848.
At Lilly Oncology, we know people living with metastatic breast cancer, or MBC, deserve more. More can be done for the mothers, daughters, sisters, wives and partners facing the unique challenges of this advanced disease, and every moment counts. While there has been progress made over the last few years in distinguishing MBC and bringing forward new treatment options, there is still more to be done to truly support the women and men living with this disease every day so they can continue to be there for family and friends. Lilly Oncology is focused on raising more awareness through education, more research, and more dedicated solutions to help empower people living with this disease. Because together, we know we can do more for MBC. This content is selected by the Cancer Support Community and is funded in part by Eli Lilly and Company.
Have you friended us on Facebook yet?
Why not?
Just go to Facebook.com/Voice America or search for the keywords Voice America. Once you are part of our Facebook network, you'll receive daily messages about what's happening with our shows, this week's featured guests, and new happenings at the Voice America Talk Radio Network. And you can add your voice to the always active discussions on our timeline. Just go to Facebook.com/Voice America or search for Voice America.
You're listening to Frankly Speaking About Cancer with the Cancer Support Community, an inspirational program offering the resources you need to live a better life with cancer. Now here's your host, Kim Tibaldo, President and CEO of the Cancer Support Community.
Welcome back to Frankly Speaking About Cancer. I'm your host, Kim Tibaldo. Our episode today is brought to you in part by AZI, Gilead, Janssen Biotech, and Pfizer Oncology. Today's show is all about talking to kids about cancer when a loved one has been diagnosed with this devastating disease. With us is entrepreneur, mother, and cancer survivor, Donya Youssef. She's the author of the award-winning book, The Monster in Mommy, Demonstify Cancer for Children. Donya, so you found some of these other resources. You found it was a, you know, pretty tough time talking to your kids, but they actually, even at their young age, were kind of intuitively knew more than maybe you thought, and were, you know, once you figured out a way to explain this to them, that they were really ready to kind of take it in and get on the train with you. So you, out of this experience, decided to create your own book while you were in treatment. So tell our readers about that and what led you to take on that project.
I just found it as a therapy initially. And then I just found it really inspiring, and I was up late each night researching a lot, and there was a lot of things I found out which I kind of fell upon, which, you know, there was amazing support out there. There was amazing charities out there. You know, they were offering us holidays and things. I mean, there was just so much out there which I didn't know, and a lot of mothers don't know. So with all of this information, I just wanted to share it with everyone. And I just thought it's no point just me knowing all this information, you know, and not being able to help others in the same situation. And seeing, you know, some of the young mothers, very young mums, going through it, it was just so traumatic. And I'm such a one just to want to help everyone, and I hate people seeing people suffering. So I then wrote the book, and then from the book it just developed, and we then, you know, we attracted lots of people around the world. And I decided I wanted to then help others share their stories too. So I launched Tiny Angels Press Limited Publishing Company, exclusively for cancer patients, cancer survivors, just so I can help them share their story and, you know, feel, you know, that happiness, that positiveness, you know, and just to spread the awareness of cancer and make people more aware, and not to be such a taboo, or not to be such a scared, freaky out thing, because it is just so common now. So, yeah, you know, it doesn't have to be a death sentence, which I thought it was initially.
What did you want your daughters to take away from what you were writing? What was the story that you wanted to tell them, and what did you want them to take away from what you wrote?
I wanted them to understand what it was, and it was nothing to do with them. I wanted them to be reassured that I was telling them the truth. And I wanted to make them feel more confident. I wanted to take the fear away from it mainly, you know. And I just wanted them to feel, you know, involved and not excluded, or they're hidden away from it. Or that's why I got them involved with the book. I wanted them, you know, they read it, they took it to school, the little one, you know, looked at the pictures. So I kind of adapted it to all age groups, from youngsters, you know, so the picture book that they can look at. And, you know, my youngest still reads it now, and she'll point at the pictures and make up her own story for it. So, I mean, it's very cute. But the eldest one, she'll read it. You know, she'll read the book, or she'll take it to school. And her friends, she gave it to her friends, and her friends loved the book as well. And her mother, one of the friends at school, actually said, look, put the book down. And she says, I don't like reading any other book, I only like this book. So from that, it was like really lovely. And it was just, yeah, I wanted to make it positive for them, and hope, and you know, in life without hope, you know, we don't live, shall we say. So I just wanted to give them a realistic view of what potentially could happen, and also, you know, to give them hope, to just to try whatever they can to change the mindset. You know, none of our days are guaranteed. And, you know, that's, you know, I got to the point, whereas with initially, if I'm worrying about dying of cancer, it's going to strip me of my life, and, you know, I could get hit by a bus tomorrow. So I just had to change my mindset, and I wanted them to adapt to that too. And talk about death, you know, it's all going to happen to all of us. And this is where I've pushed on another book I'm working on as well, about death as well, because it's a really tough thing to talk about. I mean, my children obviously question a lot. They did question me a lot, and I put a lot of questions that my children asked relative in the book, for other mothers as well, because they all ask a lot of questions from young. So, and they know a lot more than what we actually give them credit for.
It's so true, isn't it? They really, really do. Donya, I want to ask about the title, The Monster in Mommy. Where did that title come from? And did you have, I mean, I'll confess I was a little taken aback when I learned about you and started reading about you and when I read the title. Did you have any doubts about using the word monster in the title, that it could be frightening for small children, or, you know, tell us about the title?
It crossed my mind, yeah, of course. But then I thought, kids can relate to, young kids can relate to the word monster. Mm-hmm. And it is a frightening thing, you know. Mothers do die, and I just needed it to be realistic. It's not something like a, you know, just to take on lightly. Right. So with that in mind, I felt it was right. I felt it was the right thing for the title of the book. And obviously my children have been fine about it. You know, they watch the monsters on the TVs and, you know, in other books and stuff. And, you know, it is a monster. It's not nice. Cancer is horrible. You know, it shouldn't be there. So I didn't want to fluffy it up or make it something it's not. You know, it's not nice, and it does kill people, and, you know, that it is a realistic thing which happens. So yeah, I just didn't want to undermine it, shall we say.
Yeah. So Dunya, your book became an Amazon bestseller within 48 hours of its release, so congratulations on that. Yeah. And I think that really is evidence of, you know, the gap that was out there, right, and the need and the desire for more, you know, for more of these things. You know, we have a book at Cancer Support Community called What Do I Tell the Kids? And it's one of our most popular books. It just flies off the shelf, you know, because people do really struggle with how to talk to kids in an age-appropriate way, and they struggle with understanding some of the myths, you know, and misconceptions that kids have about cancer. So this project led you then to launch your own publishing company called Tiny Angels Press Limited. Tell us about the publishing company, about your mission there, and kind of, you know, what you're publishing and what you have in the pipeline and what we can expect to see down the road.
Right. Yeah. So I then reached out on social media, and I wanted to help others. So the second book I published was called Facing the Monster, and it was actually a friend, or an associate, and she went through a very aggressive cancer, and she wanted to get her images out. So she photographed all these cancer patients, and then she allowed them to tell their stories. So she's got like a huge big coffee table book, actually, and it's a photographic book of the stories of cancer patients, survivors, ones sadly passed just as the book was published. So he didn't unfortunately get to see the whole of the book in his hand, but the other cancer survivors are in there. So that was, and it was so beautiful to see all the emotions which went through it. So that was the second book which published. The third book which was published is called The Monster in Emma, and it's finding the humor with the tumor. And this is a really comical read, and it's so uplifting. And so it just brings another dimension to the table. And beautifully written, really good fun. And again, you know, it's just, she reached out to me because she saw the other book and saw what I was doing. And, you know, it's just amazing. And just seeing her so happy and excited, it was just so rewarding. And then the other book we're doing is The Monster in Mikey. And he's a 12-year-old little boy. And he's a child, and he is in remission now. But he had a very rare form of bone cancer. But thankfully, after he went through a lot, but he wrote the book with me, and we're publishing that. Well, we're launching it at the Houses of Parliament in London on October the 14th, which is going to be very exciting.
Right. Well, exciting.
Yeah, and then I've written two more books. One's called The Monster in Wonderland, which is actually turning, as we speak, into a children's animation film as well. And it's all about, like, beautiful hope and life and delivering the story, but in quite a subtle way, but still delivering the message. So my main mission is to literally keep going with this huge cancer campaign awareness I'm wanting to do. Obviously, my money is going to the cancer charities as well. And then The Monster in Grandma, that's the book about death. So that's what I've touched on. That will also be launched in the Houses of Parliament. And the newest book, which I'm working on currently at the moment, is it's actually a cookery book for children going through cancer, because your taste buds change, you find it difficult sometimes to chew, and so we've got chefs, like Michelin star chefs all over the world, like top nutritionists, who have all contributed to this book, and it's just amazing, some of these recipes. And that's going to be launched at the House of Lords as well. So, I mean, there's a wonderful lot going on.
Wonderful, yeah. No kidding. That's quite a pipeline, lady. So, congratulations on all of that success. Unfortunately, Dunya, we're at the end of our show and our time together. But I just want to thank you for joining us today. It's really been wonderful to learn more about you and your story, and to learn about your daughters. And again, taking your own cancer experience and turning it into this opportunity and ways to talk to kids about cancer and take away the fear, take away the uncertainty, and give them the language and the confidence. So I thank you. I thank you so much for joining us. I want to make sure our listeners don't go away, because we've got more to discuss on the topic with Carissa Hodgson, who's the program manager at our Gildas Club in Madison, Wisconsin. So thank you, Dunya. Hang on for Carissa. We're going to take a very quick break. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Cancer Support Community is proud to be a partner of Magnolia Meals at Home, a new pilot program that aims to help patients by providing nourishing meals to households affected by breast cancer so loved ones can spend more quality time together. This program is currently available in and around two pilot cities, Andover, Massachusetts, and Woodcliffe Lake, New Jersey. Participants will receive one delivery of meals every month for up to 6 months when enrolled in the program. Each delivery includes up to 7 meals designed to help meet the nutritional needs of people living with breast cancer, and 10 meals for family members. This novel program is brought to you by the AZI Women's Oncology Program, Magnolia, Cancer Care, the Cancer Support Community, and Meals on Wheels Association of America. To find out if you or loved ones are eligible, visit online at www.magnoliamealsathome.com. or call 617-733-5848.
At Lilly Oncology, we know people living with metastatic breast cancer, or MBC, deserve more. More can be done for the mothers, daughters, sisters, wives, and partners facing the unique challenges of this advanced disease, and every moment counts. While there has been progress made over the last few years in distinguishing MBC and bringing forward new treatment options, there is still more to be done to truly support the women and men living with this disease every day, so they can continue to be there for family and friends. Lilly Oncology is focused on raising more awareness through education, more research, and more dedicated solutions to help empower people living with this disease, because together we know we can do more for MBC. This content is selected by the Cancer Support Community and is funded in part by Eli Lilly and Company.
Hi, I'm Nick Nicolaides, President and CEO of Morphotech, and we're delighted to be a sponsor of Cancer Support Community's Frankly Speaking About Cancer series. Morphotech and its parent company, Eisai, are committed to human healthcare, and we recognize that patients and their families are the most important participants in the healthcare process. We salute our global advocacy partners who are devoted to improving the lives of people touched by cancer every day.
Cancer. It's a lonely word. Terms I don't understand. Choices I never thought I'd have to make. But there is hope and help.
Support from cancer survivors.
Links to research and clinical trials.
Help with finances and access to care.
All behind you at Breakaway from Cancer, created by Amgen to empower cancer patients.
The cancer support community is proud to be a partner of Breakaway from Cancer.
Have you friended us on Facebook yet?
Why not?
Just go to Facebook.com/Voice America or search for the keywords Voice America. Once you are part of our Facebook network, you'll receive daily messages about what's happening with our shows, this week's featured guests, and new happenings at the Voice America Talk Radio Network. And you can add your voice to the always active discussions on our timeline. Just go to Facebook.com/Voice America or search for Voice America.
You're listening to Frankly Speaking About Cancer with the Cancer Support Community, an inspirational program offering the resources you need to live a better life with cancer. Now here's your host, Kim Tibaldo, President and CEO of the Cancer Support Community.
This is Frankly Speaking About Cancer. Our episode today is brought to you in part by Pharmacyclics, an AbbVie company, Takeda Oncology, and Tesoro. A couple of our other sponsors, we'd like to thank Agios, Astellas Pharma, Janssen Oncology, Taiho, and Verastem. I'm Kim Tibaldo, and we are going to continue our conversation about talking to children about a loved one's cancer diagnosis. Joining us now is Carissa Hodgson. Carissa has been a program manager at Gilda's Club Madison, Wisconsin, since 2009. Her work centers around supporting kids and families who are navigating a cancer journey, shaped largely by her childhood experience of losing her father to lung cancer and stepfather to liver cancer. In her role at Gilda's Club, she's able to work directly with survivors and co-survivors of all ages, as well as develop psychoeducational programs to support the whole family. Carissa earned her Master's of Social Work from UW-Madison. She's a family therapist and oncology social worker who has worked in areas of child and adolescent development, chronic illness, caregiving, gender identity, sexuality, trauma, grief and loss, and family systems. She's the co-chair of the Association of Oncology Social Workers Youth, Families, and Cancer Special Interest Group. She lives in Verona, Wisconsin, with her social worker wife, young son, and her silly mutt. She looks forward to time spent with family, meandering through the prairies near her home, scratching off a visit to every state park in Wisconsin, and finding a quiet place to kayak, telling goofy stories, and laughing really hard. That sounds good to me, Carissa. Count me in. Carissa, I started the show by saying that adults struggle with what to say to children. They want to help, but they're concerned about creating fear, causing harm, and they just sometimes are at a loss for words or at a loss for how to talk to kids in an age-appropriate way. What is most important for kids to know when a parent or loved one is diagnosed with cancer?
Yeah, so a lot of families that we work with are pretty similar to Donia's story, which is having some really good intentions of wanting to spare kids from any unnecessary burden or worry. But truly, as she alluded to, it can create something that's far scarier. So we really do want to talk to kids, and there's some things that you really want your children to know. First and foremost, cancer is not their fault. So nothing that they did or said caused cancer. And I think sometimes that seems silly to parents who have older kids or teens, but quite honestly, I've worked with adults who have a part of them that believe that, you know, something terrible they said to their father might have caused the cancer. So it's okay to keep revisiting that cancer is not their fault. Mm-hmm. Also, we want kids to know that cancer is not contagious. So it's not like the cold or the flu. They can hug and snuggle the person with cancer and not catch it. And one thing I like to do is avoid using the word sick with kids, because that can be a little confusing and promotes the idea of it being similar to the cold or flu. Mm-hmm. We also want kids to know that any question's okay and that they'll be answered honestly and kept informed if things change. And lastly, kids need to know that no matter what happens, they are going to be loved and cared for. Kids are pretty egocentric, and that's okay. That's where they're at developmentally. Sure. And they really just want to know, like, how is this going to affect me, and what does this mean for me? Is someone still going to be there to take me to soccer practice and make my lunch? So they need to know that there is a plan, and that does necessitate, then, that parents do make a plan. And creating wills and guardianship plans is valuable for all parents, regardless of cancer. And I know it can be scary. But I've also heard parents say that while it was hard to think about and initiate the process, completing it really did decrease their worry and freed up their energy so that they could be more present, knowing that a safety net was created. And what I love is I was able to look at Donya's book, and she covered all these points. So these are important points that you cannot revisit enough.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. I've also heard people say, Carissa, that it's important to keep a schedule and keep a routine and, you know, sort of keep some discipline and keep expectations, try to keep things a little bit, you know, normal during this tough time. Is that true? Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. And I think sometimes there's the tendency for parents to want to let up a little bit, and they think, oh, God, my kid's already dealing with this cancer in the family. I'm just not going to expect as much from them. But what we find out is that kids can actually be more freaked out by that. It can be pretty scary because they're thinking, God, Mom doesn't care that my room's a disaster, and she doesn't care that I flunked my math test. And so in their heads, they're thinking that things must be even worse than it is, that Mom doesn't care. Mm-hmm. So really what we know about kids is that routines can create a sense of security, especially at a time when they need it the most.
So I think that that's important information, you know, for us to be thinking about. And I appreciate, Carissa, you helping me kind of talk through some of those myths and misconceptions and the importance of staying on that, you know, staying on that routine and keeping that schedule. Carissa, I know that adults and children both struggle with fear and anxiety in this kind of situation. But I think in some ways children have fewer tools, right, than adults or less experienced dealing with these kinds of things. So they may not know how to ask for help, to whom to ask for help. They may kind of keep these things inside. What should parents look for in their children that may indicate some distress? And I'll just add to that, should they be talking to teachers and counselors and being in touch with folks who spend a lot of time with their kids, right?
Right. Well, you know, I think Donya hit the nail on the head when she said she recognized that something was wrong when she saw her own kids acting out. And she really just followed her gut. And I think we need to remember that as parents, we are experts of our children. We have a gut feeling of when something is off. You know, we want to look for, you know, significant persistent changes in our kids. So if they're typically really active and engaged and now they're very withdrawn, perhaps they need some additional support. Looking for changes in the big four is what I tell parents. So development, school, sleep, and eating. Donya talked about her five-year-old suddenly wetting the bed. That was a cue. Looking for problems in school, you know, sleeping too much, too little, eating too much or too little. So if you see any of these, yes, you do want to connect with those support folks. If it's more of a medical issue, maybe you want to connect with your primary care provider. If it's something happening in school, definitely connect with one of those school staff. I think we need to remember that kids spend a lot of their time in school, and so they can have some great support there, whether that be with a social worker, a psychologist, a counselor, and then, of course, wanting to connect with some mental health professionals who can also offer them some coping skills. I don't think it's ever a bad idea to have that extra set of supportive ears or for kids to have additional tools to cope with stress. But by and large, I think it's important for parents to remember that kids are resilient. By and large, that they can weather a cancer diagnosis in the family and come out the other end fully intact, and sometimes even stronger. We conducted a survey here at Gildas Club Madison last year and found that many parents and even kids experienced what we sort of call the silver linings of cancer. They reported greater empathy for others, increased gratitude for each other, and enhanced appreciation for life. And some kids even said that they wouldn't wish that their parent never had cancer because it actually connected them with new friends and taught them new skills. So that's pretty telling.
So I want to go back to the to sort of resources that are available. I think you said something that's really important, that, you know, the schools have counselors, they have psychologists, so to really tap in, you know, to that network is important. I also know, obviously, at our affiliates, cancer support communities, Gildas clubs, we have programs and experts like you to work with kids who have cancer in the family, and a lot of sort of therapeutic play and things like that for kids. So what other resources should people be looking for in the community that might help them through this?
Definitely, if you can get your kid or your family connected to some in-person support, that's a bonus. That's fantastic, because for kids, it really normalizes their experience. We're seeking that as adults, but for kids, they might be the only kid in their class that has a mom or dad, grandma or grandpa with cancer. And so if they can show up in person and see other families like them, that's fantastic. If you can find a cancer support community affiliate, wonderful. If you have to get creative about maybe networking in your community, whether it be through school, through church, friend of a friend, creating play dates, find some way, if possible, to get your kids interacting with other kids. It might be through a camp. There are some great summer camps like Camp Kesem that kids can stay connected. It could be through church and spiritual leaders, again, their school. And just not forgetting how important those books are for kids. Donia creating all these books, it's such a wonderful resource for kids to be able to hear and see other families like them. It's so powerful for them.
Yeah. I also know that oftentimes, Carissa, there are folks around you, friends and neighbors and parents from school, who want to find ways to help. I know at Cancer Support Community, we have My Lifeline, which has a helping calendar, right? And I see that a lot of people use My Lifeline to put on the calendar, hey, could you take my kid to soccer on Thursday? Hey, could you bring us, our family, a meal on Friday? How important is it to kind of guide folks and help them engage, to sort of help you kind of get through this with your kids?
Yeah, well, and we hear so often from our families that they have all of these fantastic neighbors and friends and their kids' parents saying, we want to help, let us know how we can help. And people with cancer and their partners want to accept that help, but sometimes it's hard to say exactly what you need. So if you are able to designate very specific tasks, like you said, whether it's bringing your kid to soccer practice, bringing very specific meals, taking the dog for a walk, or just creating play dates, if you can put that out there, your support team, your neighbors, are more willing to just pick that up because they can see very clearly what you're looking for. So it is very helpful to those support people as well.
Let me ask you another question, Carissa. I know that obviously telling the kids initially about a cancer diagnosis in the family can be very difficult, but that's not the first and last conversation that's going to happen, right? I mean, even if you look at Dunya's journey, right? She had some pretty tough chemo. She had, multiple surgeries, post-treatment. How do you make sure you're sort of checking in? I mean, do you do a weekly family meeting, or do you just look for those signs from your kids and say it's time for a check-in? Or how do you make sure everybody kind of stays in the loop and stays on the right path?
Right. Well, certainly talking with your kids, it's not a one-and-done conversation. You'll have to keep coming back to it. Oftentimes, your kids are circling back and asking questions over and over again, but you might need to check in, especially if there are updates. You're wanting to make sure that you are being very honest with your kids, and so if there is an update, make sure you tell them.
Yeah, yeah. So just keep that open flow of communication. Carissa, I know that parents and adults have a difficult time describing what cancer is to young children, and I've also heard and read that how you talk to a 5-year-old about cancer is quite different than how you talk to a 12-year-old or a 15-year-old. Can you suggest some language that might be helpful in terms of describing cancer, explaining what it is to kids, maybe let's say sort of younger kids, and then maybe teenagers?
Sure, absolutely. Well, first of all, we do want to recognize that, and you alluded to this, all kids will pick up that something is different in a family. So ignoring that there is cancer doesn't really work. Even babies can pick up on a change in routine or a change in caregiver. So as best as we can, we're trying to let our kids know what's going on. Use the word cancer. I like Donia said that she wanted to take control where she could, and by accepting her cancers when she told the kids. And then by telling them, it's when the anxiety really dropped. So keep in mind that by telling them and giving language to kids, you're giving them a fantastic coping tool, being able to put language to what they're feeling and what they're thinking. You may want to help kids, especially young kids, show them where the cancer is in your body. Use diagrams. This is when those children's books come in handy, or use children's cancer glossaries, because, man, words in the cancer world are really big and confusing, even for adults. And so being able to make it a little bit more accessible to kids is fantastic. You know, even young children can understand, you know, using phrases like, you know, our bodies are made of tiny cells. Cancer happens when cells somewhere in our body grow out of control. This stops the healthy, normal way our bodies work. And then, you know, of course, your specific cancer and location will change how you move further with that. But that helps kids to understand the body and what's happening. You want to use in simple words, short phrases. Like you said, you're going to talk to a two-year-old different than a teenager. But you definitely want to talk about what treatment's going to look like, too. So, you know, mommy has a lump in her breast. It's called breast cancer. Something like, mommy's going to go to the doctor to get medicine called chemotherapy. That should make the lump go away. It might make her feel tired, make her tummy upset, cause her hair to fall out. And so you're just kind of giving your kids these short snippets of information that they can think about and digest and give them room to ask questions. And some families, metaphors work really well. So I know a big one is, you know, cancer is like weeds in a garden. For Donia, this idea of a monster, that really works well for her family. So using your own unique family language could be really useful.
And just one a quick follow-up question on that. I understand that hair loss can be particularly traumatic for kids. So important to discuss that in advance before, you know, the parent experiences
definitely.
The hair loss.
Yeah, just like adults, kids want to be prepared. They want a heads up. Yeah. So if you know that you'll be experiencing some physical changes, hair loss, an amputation, any kind of change in your physical body, give your kids a heads up. And that might be a great place to utilize some of those books so that they can start thinking about what that will look like so they can be prepared. Separation is a big one. So if you know that you will be spending a long time in a hospital trying to prepare your children for that separation, there's some fantastic books out there like The Kissing Hand and The Invisible String. Those books give kids and you a touching stone, if you will, that really engages their resilience and allows them to be alone while knowing that you're still there loving them.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, boy, Carissa, I'm sad we're getting to the end of our show here because there's so much more that we could discuss on this. But I really wanted to thank you for coming onto the show today and sharing so many great tips and insights for families who are facing cancer. I want to thank Donia as well for sharing her own story and the wonderful resources that she has created out of her cancer journey to help others who are facing a cancer diagnosis, especially with school-age kids in the home, which is becoming more and more common. So it's been a pleasure to have both of you on Frankly Speaking About Cancer today. I'm Kim Thibodeau, CEO of the Cancer Support Community, and I just want to mention to our listeners, we've got some great resources for you, for your families, for your kids. If you visit us at cancersupportcommunity.org, you'll learn about our 47 affiliates around the country. You can also call and speak to one of our counselors by phone. That phone number is 888-793-9355. Again, 888-793-9355. All of our services are free to people with all cancers at any stage of disease. So give us a call. Thank you for joining today for Frankly Speaking About Cancer. I'm Kim Thibodeau. Until next time, be well. Do well, live well.
Thank you for joining us for Frankly Speaking About Cancer with your host, Kim Thibodeau. We're here for you every Tuesday afternoon at 1 p.m. Pacific Time and 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Network. In the meantime, stay connected online at cancersupportcommunity.org. That's cancersupportcommunity.org.